Grant Duff, Part 2, continued from the November-December 2015 issue. Throughout his life, Grant Duff safely lived within the high walls of the British aristocracy. He moved closely with those of power and influence, the learned and the wise from around the world. But it was only when he walked into the old hall of the Maharishi in 1935 that he experienced the greatest event of his life, which he expressed in the following poem. With Sri Ramana of Arunachala, I have wandered far. Yes, I have been from land to land to land. Sages I have seen, great king and queen, the lowly, wise and grand. But only there, at the ashramam by Arunachalam, have I known that joy without alloy, I am. I am, I am. Grant Duff, Douglas Ainslie. This poem and the following article were written for the Golden Jubilee souvenir in 1946. Grant Duff sent it to the ashram from Santa Barbara, California, where he had been living for the previous 8 years. It is interesting that two other foreigners that he met at Ramanashramam in 1935 also spent the last decade of their lives in close proximity to each other in California. The two others were Maur Piggott from England and Evans Wentz from Florida. In the Golden Jubilee souvenir, under the title of My Visit to Maharishi, the greatest event in my life, he writes, I had first become interested in India on perusing my grandfather's History of the Maharathas, which is still read by many and is regarded as a classic of its kind. Though not actually, I believe, styled governor, he practically ruled that part of the ancient land for some years and became very much attached to the Maharathas and to the Indian tradition in general. Leslie Stephen's reference to my grandfather reads as follows. The Indian Empire is the most marvelous proof of this. He is referring to the many great actions which are completely forgotten that the world can supply. A man died not long ago who, at 25 years of age, with no previous training, was set to govern a kingdom with absolute power, and who did govern it so wisely and firmly that he literally changed a wilderness into a fruitful land. Probably no one who reads these lines will guess to whom they allude. I can, however, say that they allude to James Grant Duff, 1789-1858, the author of The History of the Maharathas, and father, Sir James Fitz James Stephenson's friend, Sir Mountstuart, Douglas Ainslie's uncle, his father's brother. James Grant Duff was employed by the East Indian Company. In the early days of the 80s of last century, my uncle, the late Sir Mountstuart Grant Duff, who was then governor of Madras, asked me to come out to his place and stay there as long as I liked. This was just what I should have wished to do. But when I had read my uncle's letter triumphantly to my parents, after a brief consultation, my father told me, to my amazement, that they could not allow me to go to India owing to the climate of that country. I mention these facts as they may serve to explain to some extent my curious mental position as regards India. I was, on the one hand, surrounded with the usual crowd of materialists and followers of Herbert Spencer when I was 18. And on the other, I felt an obscure longing for something else, which I knew existing somewhere else, but where I was not sure precisely, owing to the influences of Oxford teaching. There, at Oxford, I wasted my time taking a degree and doing little else but play about, as I had done the previous 4 years at Eton with groups of shallow-minded youths one would often find in the higher classes in a school. Soon after I commenced my studies at Oxford, I felt the urge to write down some of the poetry that was surging within me, and published several volumes of verse besides sending poems to the magazines of the day. In the matter of attending social parties, etc., I was not quite as bad as Robert Browning, though I wasted lots of time that way. Though the torch be inverted, the flame will burn upward the same. Though the name no longer be flame, but just man in the mire, he too will burn upward aspire to the place whence he came. For he too is fire of a quenchless desire. Though the torch be inverted, the flame will burn upward the same. A good deal later, there occurred an episode which has some bearing on the present subject of my quest for the truth, how and where I ultimately found it. I was a member of the Aristocratic Union Club at Naples, where, for the first time, I came into contact with Benedetto Croce's writings. His philosophy of art and of practical, as also his logical studies, interested me intensely. Unacquainted with anyone who could introduce me to the philosopher, I called upon him myself to see what would happen next. Everything went splendidly when I had explained who I was and my love for philosophy of the idealistic sort which he practiced. In the course of a few weeks, I was already at work on his Aesthetic as Science of Expression and General Linguistic. This intercourse, though verbal and intellectual, with a great thinker, did stimulate my interest in the things of the spirit, and I was always looking about for someone with a definite solution to the problem of the universe. While I was in the state of mind, a thirst for a deeper understanding about life, the world, and what they mean, I came to know of the sage of the Hill of the Holy Beacon. It was the good Mr. Raffle Hurst who told me of the Holy One and the ashram at Thiruvannamalai. Eventually, I found my way out there and had the greatest adventure of my life. Mark my words, I do not know what happened when I saw Maharishi for the first time, but the moment he looked at me, I felt he was the truth and the light. There could be no doubt about it, and all the doubts and speculations I had accumulated during the past many years disappeared in the radiance of the Holy One. It is very difficult to describe in words the unanticipated change that came over me. Suffice it to say that though my visit to the ashram were brief, I felt that every moment I was there, I was building up within me what could never be destroyed, whatever may happen to this body and mind. A careful reading of the admirable biography of Sri Ramana Maharishi by V.V. Narasimha Swami revealed to me what I could never hope to know otherwise. I will only mention here just a very few of the points in which the Maharishi has particularly appealed to me. One of these is the extreme politeness and gentleness which always surrounds his least act. It is as though he is actually conscious of the frail beings whom he is addressing and avoiding the words that may cause them to be ashamed or to regret something they had done. All the incidents in the above-mentioned biography seem to me to illustrate this fact in relation to Maharishi. His extraordinary insight into other beings combined with his marvelous gentleness. He sees and knows everything about all those who come before him, but he is gentle to a degree that surpasses gentleness, whereby he reaches his end with perfect ease and to the utmost benefit of the visitor. The visit of Humphreys to the Maharishi is one of the most interesting incidents for us Europeans. It occurred over 35 years ago, yet the account he left of his visits to the sage supplies all the details that are necessary. His concluding words are highly significant. It is wonderful what a difference it makes to have been in his presence. I must say the same from my personal experience. My visit to the sage of Arunachala has been the greatest event in my life. Any of those of the West who are still waiting and wondering would do well to pack their sack as quickly as possible and be off to India while there is yet time. What I feel personally is that so much has been done during the last 10 years in the way of making known the savior of mankind that further comment is simply osios. Grant Duff appears to have resided in South India and Ceylon for at least 2 years. He studied Sanskrit in Coimbatore 6 months. From conversations recorded in talks with Sri Ramana Maharishi, we know for sure that he visited Bhagavan at least 3 times. During his visits, he would occupy the small cottage next to Major Chadwick's. About 2 years after he arrived in India, he was still found to be in Ceylon, and his proximity to the ashram proved advantageous when his summons arrived in the ashram, ordering Bhagavan to appear in the velour coat. Sri Kunji Swami writes about it in his reminiscences. A devotee went to court claiming the property of the ashram. He tried hard to drag Sri Bhagavan himself to the court as the defendant. Following the legal process, a summons was also served on Sri Bhagavan to appear in court. Devotees felt very sad at this. At this time, divine forces began to work through Grant Duff, a great devotee of Sri Bhagavan, who was at the time in Ceylon. When he heard the news, he was shocked. What? Dragging Sri Bhagavan to court? This must be Satan's plot. This must be foiled. He sent a telegram to Lord Erskine, the governor of Madras. Please don't drag Sri Bhagavan to court. A commission can examine him in the ashram itself. An order to this effect was sent to the court concerned, and a copy of it was sent to the ashram. The letter came to the Trivannamalai post office the day before the trial. Ramaswamy Pillai used to fetch the mail in a leather pouch. When he emptied the contents of the pouch, everyone anxiously looked for the letter from the government. There was none. All were disappointed. That night, devotees were deeply worried. When they were talking among themselves in the presence of Sri Bhagavan, Ramaswamy Pillai put his hand into the leather pouch casually. Lo, his hand felt a big envelope. It was a letter from the government. He took it out. It had got stuck to the pouch. It was a marvel. The commission met Sri Bhagavan at the ashram. The whole inquiry fizzled out. That commission's lawyers visited Bhagwan twice, November 15th and December 5th, 1936. Fortunately for us, Munagala Venkatramaya was present on both occasions, and we have today a record of Bhagwan's replies to very pointed questions regarding his spiritual state, how he views the ashram, its management, the devotees gathered around him, Upadesh and the Guru. While reading it, you can't help but think that Bhagwan was fully aware of the objectives of the commission and answered the questions in such a manner that the legitimacy of the whole affair was ultimately undermined.